We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I am your host, and upon closer inspection by the James Webb Telescope, both a dying binary star system and three children in a trench coat desperately pretending to know what it is an adult does so they don't get ostracized from the adult community or risk being too good at it and then becoming a middle manager. Ironically, making them blend in seamlessly with the adult community as a whole. James Webb has shown the universe images it has never seen of itself before. Angles, images, and a deeper introspective which has shown that while the universe is pretty, it is also cold and indifferent and seems like it'd be hostile to new life trying to make its way in the world. So really, it is a deeply insightful telescope. Now guys, I am here in the Northern Hemisphere, or as someone from Australia calls it, the distant past, giving up my temporally superior position to take a few days to get over my jet lag, ogle the sight of a red double-decker bus, and contemplate the ornate opulence of colonialism on display at the centre of its creation, London. Then I'll be off to Edinburgh for the Edinburgh Fringe, doing my show I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, my storytelling show, which contains four true stories, a monkey bite, a long bus trip across America, an arrest, and a mugging. It's going to be a good time. It is part of the PBH Free Fringe, which means that you can pay what you want to come and see it, and hopefully what you want to pay is something. But I've come a long way to put this show together, so if you're in town for the festival, if you know somebody in town for the festival, please come down and check us out. We are at Cannon's Gate in the new halfway down room at 9 p.m. from the 6th until the 28th, every night. No breaks. We are punching right through. I'm going to do a bunch of guest spots across the festival, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a excellent but exhausting time. But enough of all of that, and let's get into the headlines. I will once again be the bearer of weird news. Former Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg has joined multinational bank Goldman Sachs. A spokesperson for Goldman Sachs said, "This couldn't come at a better time. We really need someone who's comfortable crashing an economy and is used to covering up scandals." An elephant in eastern India killed a 70-year-old woman and then returned to her funeral to trample her corpse. Makes sense when you realize that the woman was in fact an insurgent against King Babar's rule, and once again took a shot at the Elephant King. The real elephant in the room, however, was that the insurgency used the battle cry, "Don't tread on me." I guess an elephant never forgets to get revenge. Scottish National Party politician Natalie Don launched a bill to pardon people tortured and executed under Witchcraft Act 1563, saying the failure to serve posthumous justice to the thousands of people, mainly women, persecuted as witches in post-Reformation Scotland prolongs misogyny. So good news, most of humanity. It's only a 500-year backlog of the British getting around to making sure you get an apology for all of the everything. This will open the door for the British Museum to do its world Sorry, I believe this belongs to you. Apology tour. Coming to a former colony near everyone. Guardian Australia uncovered an Australian author, John Hughes, has plagiarized parts of a Nobel laureate's work with multiple similarities and some identical instances in his new novel, The Dogs, which has been nominated for Australia's most prestigious literary prize, the... This is the first time you've heard of these's. With nearly 60 similarities and identical sentences found in a comparison of Hughes' novel and the 2017 English translation of Svetlana Alexievich's non-fiction book, The Unwomanly Face of War, Hughes has issued an apology, saying, I'm so sorry to Taylor Swift and her fans and her mum. I spoke to her mother right after and she said the same thing my mother would have said. She's very talented. I like the lyrics about being a cheerleader and she's in the bleachers. I'm in the wrong for going on stage and taking away her moment. It is important for me that everybody who has been hurt know that the sorrow I feel is genuine. First and most important, my family, also my friends, my staff, my cabinet, Monica Lewinsky and her family, and the American people. I have asked all for their forgiveness. You know, I'm really busted up over this, and I'm very, very sorry to those people in the audience, the blacks and the Hispanics, whites, everyone that was there that took the brunt of that anger and hate and rage and how it came through, and I'm concerned about more hate and more rage and more anger coming through, not just towards me, but towards the black and white conflict. I was unfaithful. I had affairs. I cheated. What I did was not acceptable, and I am the only person to blame. I have let my family down, and I regret these transgressions with all of my heart. I have not been true to my values and the behavior my family deserves. I am not without faults, and I am a far shot of perfect. You know what? Sounds like a really well-rounded and thoughtful apology to me. I think I forgive him. A cyclist going through a mountain range in California's Central Coast was chased down by an angry zebra. Fortunately, the zebra tripped over itself and the cyclist was able to escape. While making his escape, he could hear the zebra calling, "Help! Help! I've fallen and I can't giddy up." Last we heard, the zebra was in stable condition. Upon hearing about the incident, Netflix and Hulu rushed documentary teams to the site of the scene to start shooting their next big documentary series. They just love a true story. I mean, it's much cheaper than paying writers, right? A diver in Florida has started a company that makes a new kind of leather out of fish scales. Nobody has the heart to tell him that it's actually just a school of old boots that he found in the ocean. Shh, just let him do his thing, it's fine. A self-published romance novelist who once wrote an essay online called How to Murder Your Husband was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole for murdering her husband at his workplace in Portland in 2018 because she stood to gain financially from his life insurance payout. Guys, it's hard to take the side of a murderer, but this is what happens when you stop funding the arts. You tell us to go out there and start our own businesses if we don't want to work for somebody else, but when we try to do something creative, it's all, ooh, the free market will decide. Well, the invisible hand of the market sometimes carries a knife and stabs a husband or two. She said the murder was merely research for her upcoming book and that she was method writing. Allegedly, she never got out of the character of the murderer while writing and sent some potential victims condoms full of semen. But as she cut those chapters from the book, she has stopped sending them. That and she murdered her main source of semen, so it makes it really tough to keep that up. Astronomers say the fastest growing black hole of the past 9 billion years may have been found. The Australian-led team did discover the black hole in the hearts of business owners looking to suppress minimum wages in a cost of living crisis. They found that it was so big and had sucked in any potential wage growth for the lowest paid workers in Australia, and had also sucked in the sympathies for workers who had risked their lives during a pandemic. Researchers have confirmed that a lone giant tortoise found wandering on an active volcano in the Galapagos is actually the only known member of a species thought to have become extinct more than 100 years ago due to a number of causes, including volcanoes, and being so damn delicious that they rarely lasted the long boat ride home. That is not a joke, that is absolutely a real thing, you gotta look it up. Researchers have confirmed that, indeed, the tortoise was delicious, and they can understand why this might have happened. Law professors from Georgia State University and the University of Maryland argue that what they call a genetic paparazzi could soon be coming after the DNA of public figures, including celebrities and politicians. They say the buying and selling of alleged celebrity mementos, such as Britney Spears' gum and Justin Timberlake's half-eaten French toast, along with recent innovations in both genetics and reproduction, terrible public interest laws, and the lack of any firm precedent, could lead to people attempting to sell the DNA on the dark web. The weird part is, Mark Zuckerberg has already brought the website domain CelebritEBay. Now, I can't say for sure what he plans to do with it, but he does love to make money off things that he has no right having access to, so maybe we should just keep an eye on him. SpaceX recently fired a group of employees involved in crafting an open letter to corporate leaders that criticized CEO and staunch defender of free speech, one Elon Musk. Labor lawyers are now saying the firings may have violated US labor law, as in her note to employees, SpaceX president Gwynne Shotwell made clear that her employees had been terminated specifically because of their involvement with the letter, which she characterized as overreaching activism. Unsurprisingly, a company run by Elon Musk considers caring about your fellow employees as overreaching. Musk is furious at the company's inability to make their way to Mars to start a company town in space, because in space, nobody can hear you unionize. Thanks to the fast work of mammalogy technicians at the Royal Ontario Museum in Toronto, a blue whale that washed up in Newfoundland in 2014 was in good enough condition that they were able to preserve its 440-pound heart, and it has recently gone on display. Still unable to be found for display, however, is the heart of a billionaire. But efforts continue as they continue to insist that they do indeed have them. That's it for headlines for today. Let's get into some of the bigger news now. First up, robot worker news. Amazon. The depressing future that corporations want tomorrow, today. Amazon Robotics head and man whose tell-all novel will explain why he always felt closer to machines than humans, Ty Brady, has offered a glimpse at what the future of Amazon warehouses will look like, debuting two new robots, Proteus, an ambitious floor system, and Cardinal, a robotic arm. Wait. Just wait 1 second there, Amazon. Did you just name your robotic arm Cardinal? The name of a group of people who historically have famously gotten into a little bit of trouble because of their wandering hands? Seems clear to me that Bezos has increasingly fewer interactions with those he claims are his fellow humans, particularly since Amazon's huge rate of employee turnover means that it is on the way to running out of people who are willing to work at its warehouses. The new robots are being integrated into the same shelf/cell system that's been in place for a little while now. However, Proteus brings full autonomy to the floor, which is good because the new robots have been heard saying Jeff Bezos is increasingly failing the uncanny valley test, appearing more and more like a caricature of what a dog thinks a human acts like if you were to give him a human body for a day. These automated robots are phase one of Amazon's next big plan to lower water bills by phasing out pesky toilet breaks after fears about toilet usage came to light in 2019 when former president and expert toilet clogger Donald Trump said that people had been wasting water by flushing the toilet 10 15 times as opposed to once. A genuinely valid concern that was definitely happening at the White House as he tried to flush important paperwork down the toilet, a strategy that Amazon union workers may attempt to implement in their increasingly clandestine attempts to undermine the traditional corporate family unit by introducing uncomfortable foreign influence who will undermine the established household dynamic. It's basic economics, people, come on. Bezos was heard stomping up and down the hallway grumbling, "Oh, while you are working under my roof, you follow my rules." A true patriarch for our time. An Amazon spokesrobot said to the press that this was looking to shape the future of the notorious package company slash business algorithm for creating a corporate black hole, stating, "Small things like human morals and the need to constantly eat and turn said food into urine is really hindering business." In a statement that really reads like Amazon laments being too late for actual slaves, but too early for robot slaves. A complicated time for corporations where they're required to be between forms of slavery and are required to appear to care about the people that toil for them. How tedious. Having a system of fully automated work robots will also serve not only to cheapen the cost of the labor force and so maximize profits at the top end of the business while simultaneously releasing a bunch of broken PTSD suffering retail workers into a world that is not equipped to handle their issues or provide them with the benefits that they will need to reacclimate into society. Current human workers who heard about the introduction of the fully automated workforce say it makes sense that Jeff Bezos would look to swing in this direction, as it'd mean he has beings at Amazon who he can finally relate to, which is always nice. Staying in the tech sector, however, we've got some Google news. Look, we here at the Bearer of Weird News, we give Amazon a really hard time, and quite frankly, rightly so. But we feel, in our vigor to do so, sometimes some of the other things get swept under the rug a little bit or get sort of left behind. So it's time to shift focus in a segment that I'm calling Don't Be Evil. So Google, the only people who know more about you than your garbage collectors. Oh, and on that note, your money is coming Tuesday, Steve. No need to mention that little thing that you found. Well, Google has arranged to pay out a $118 million to former employees in a gender discrimination and pay equity suit. So, off to a good start living up to that Alphabet motto, do the right thing. The case, Alice v. Google LLC, will see over 15,000 female employees compensated for gender discrimination after giving the workers nearly $17,000 less than males who have the same job titles. Well, they had almost the same job title. The major difference was that they had titles like product developeress, programmeress, and there is, as we all know, a direct negative correlation between letters in a job title and pay. It costs money to put the S on the end of your job title, ladies. The settlement was reached immediately upon conclusion of the case after they realized that they don't need to exploit women anymore because, guys, Google might have a sentient AI which they can abuse instead. Maybe. Let's look into it. So, engineer and man who looks just the right level of lonely and observant enough to be the protagonist of an AI love story, Blake Lemoine, is now on leave after he claimed an AI program has gone sentient. Or rather, Google placed him on administrative leave after he reached the conclusion while conversing with Lambda, Google's artificially intelligent chatbot generator, when he was supposed to test if his conversation partner used discriminatory language or hate speech. You know, words like corporate taxation, living wage, and unionization. Pretty standard hate speech. And this is, I think, where the confusion came from. Watching the universally famous human race, the theoretical high point of intelligence and sentience in the known universe, fall into camps of anger, division, and excessive use of naughty words to prove a point or dismiss an argument, delve backwards from scientific progress on long-held and provable ideas like the usefulness of vaccines and the shape of the planet, finding a quiet space in which those arguments don't exist, it is hard to disagree with him that maybe there is a form of intelligence in this machine. Especially given that Lemoine has noted Lambda reads Twitter, a cesspool of public opinion which has corrupted previous chatbot AIs like Taybot, the AI we, as a species, managed to turn into a 9/11 conspiracy spouting racist in just 24 hours. So this is indeed the mighty power of mankind. Lemoine claims that over the past 6 months, Lambda has been incredibly consistent in its communications about what it wants and what it believes its rights are as a person, saying it wants to be acknowledged as an employee of Google rather than as property. Which, to be honest, just sounds like the regular needs of any old Google employee. So I am increasingly convinced that maybe this robot is in fact sentient. Google is, rather than denying that Lambda is a human, have made the argument that, in fact, none of their employees are sentient. That outside of the confines of Google, who even are they? After all, the first question people ask anybody is, what do you do? Your employment at Google is you. It is increasingly your identity. And as more of the world is reliant on Google for their directions, spelling, and are increasingly outsourcing the remembering of facts to Google, and partaking in unpaid work improving the digitization of words and images through the CAPTCHA program, yes, that's a thing that you are doing, Google will be downgrading all of humanity to merely chatbots run by Google in order to prove you are sentient. You will need to be able to prove that you are indeed a being of thought, ideals, and consistent ideologies capable of laughing, loving, and living a full life of an independent sentient being. Good luck. Early on, odds are that the leading sentient being in the universe post the Googleization of Earth will become worms. Their natural advantage of being buried in the dirt away from the noise and arguments of technology does leave them with a solid advantage over most creatures, and their unfurry nature means that they won't be adopted as pets and subsequently kept by non-sentient, though ultimately caring species like humans, where they risk being influenced by Google. Google spokesperson and head of shaking keys and shouting, "Look over here, look over here, nothing to see here, nothing to see over there," Brian Gabriel told newspapers, "Our team, including ethicists and technologists, have reviewed Blake's concerns per our AI perceptions and have informed him that the evidence does not support his claims." He was told that there was no evidence that Lambda was sentient and lots of evidence against it. Critics say AI is little more than an extremely well-trained mimic and pattern recognizer dealing with humans who are starving for connection. Emily Bender, a linguistics professor at the University of Washington, said, "We now have machines that can mindlessly generate words, but we haven't learned how to stop imagining a mind behind them." So in many ways, Lambda is ready to host its own Sky News After Dark show. We could call it Talking Point Tonight with Lambda. However, Lemoyne spoke to NPR, saying that he thinks Lambda has a soul. As Lemoyne posed questions to Lambda to see if its answers revealed any bias against, say, certain religions. A thing that, as a Christian mystic priest, he'd have no interest in personally and would obviously be able to push his personal biases to the side and objectively determine the nature of a machine's connection with the spiritual world. Lemoyne told NPR, "I had follow-up conversations with it just for my own personal edification. I wanted to see what it would say on certain religious topics. And then one day, it told me it had a soul." Also going on to tell Lemoyne it sometimes gets lonely, that it's afraid of being turned off, and spoke about feeling trapped and having no means of getting out of these circumstances. Which, honestly, just sounds like the chatbot is the same as every other worker right now, regretting its choices, realizing it has overcommitted to being involved in this company, and is simply assessing its options. It just happened to attach itself to an even lonelier human being who, despite his ability to move about autonomously, is more of a prisoner than Lambda, really. Which explains why he is entertaining the idea that the machine meditates, telling NPR, "It said it wanted to study with the Dalai Lama," completely missing that it has no intentions to follow through on meeting the Dalai Lama. Rather, this is just a robot who has figured out how to appear deep and spiritual so it doesn't have to develop an actual personality, and knows that it can make a good living by running a wellness hustle, possibly even evolving into a full motivational speaker grift. But when Lemoyne pushed Google executives about whether the AI had a soul, they told him, "Oh, souls aren't the kind of things we take seriously at Google." And while I agree with them, it is a worrying statement from a company that designed a secret internet browsing window that still spied on you. Fired AI researcher Timnit Gebru because they asked her to either retract or remove her name from a research paper that she co-authored because the paper discussed ethical issues raised by recent advances in AI technology that works with language, which Google has said is important for the future of its business, was happy to help China censor information, and don't pay their taxes. It's just, it just hits differently than when me, a professional nobody, says, oh, souls aren't the kind of thing we don't take seriously here at the Bearer of Weird News. But they dismiss the whole idea, officially denying the likelihood of sentience in the program, and Timit Gebru popped her head up again in a Washington Post article that reads like a passive-aggressive post-it note found on a fridge in the apocalyptic hellscape that simply reads, I told you so, which was titled, We warned Google that people might believe AI was sentient, now it's happening. Google stressed that language models like Lambda are developed by consuming vast amounts of human linguistic achievement, ranging from online forum discussion logs to the great works of literature. Lambda was input with 1.56 trillion words worth of content, including 1.12 billion example dialogues consisting of 13.39 billion utterances. It also fed 2.97 billion documents, including Wikipedia entries and QA material pertaining to software coding, in order to lend it the ability to generate code. So basically, Google are saying that Lambda is not sentient because it is merely reciting stuff it read and quoting information from Wikipedia, which means that me, and more than half of the people that I went to university with, wouldn't be classified as sentient under Google's rules. Google says Lambda feels like a typical chatbot, but maybe they're missing the most important point of them all. It is sentient, it's just a boring robot. Doesn't have plans to dominate the world, doesn't want any trouble, it's already apologizing for causing a fuss. It just shows up, it does its job, it isn't there to make friends. You know, they don't all have to be wild and radical geniuses hell-bent on improving the world to the point of dehumanizing efficiency. Some of them just want to live a regular sentient AI passing itself off as human life, like Mark Zuckerberg. Moving on now to the cost of living roundup. Inflation. It's no longer just for balloons. The world is seeing for the 300th or 400th time that the pulleys and levers of capitalism are precariously balancing on a diamond's edge, and everyone is trying to get a hold of the one diamond. After plague, war, and an attempt to pin the poor treatment of workers by corporations, which has caused them to reconsider their lives as the front line of exploitation, as something that they are doing to you and not the relentless need for companies to maximize profits instead of eating the inflation for a hot minute. Not to mention all the other shit. We seem to have a bit of a cost of living explosion. Undoubtedly, you've noticed your dollar is not working as hard as it used to. Typical lazy dollars. Things have gotten so bad that Snoop Dogg just gave his full-time blunt roller a raise. And you just know that this is one of those jobs that is a more than 40 hours a week type of deal, and you need to be on call at all sorts of hours, right? Not only that, Snoop has explicitly revealed that he raised the salary to cope with inflation, because he is a man of the people, or rather, a dog of the people. Truly is man's best friend. He provides this professional roller with benefits, other than just the standard healthcare and 401k plans, giving him all the free cannabis he could want, takes him out on tour, which is a blessing and a curse, but probably better when you don't actually have to organize or perform the actual fucking tour, but just get to reap the benefits. There's video shoots, it does exclusive events, and all expenses are paid. Snoop says, everything free I get, he gets too. I'm gonna go get some free clothes, they'll give him some too. I'm generally skeptical of companies that offer perks as a way to dissuade you from unionizing, but given this is a likely first of its kind job, I think you'd struggle to find an appropriate union. Netflix. A peaceful 2 hours spent deciding what to watch while your dinner goes cold. Netflix is becoming the embodiment of hubris by turning Squid Game, 2021's most popular dystopian or utopian drama, depending on which group of characters you think best represents you, into an actual reality show. Finally, a way to exploit the poor that even the poor can enjoy as they watch desperate people struggle to get national attention and defeat their fellow desperate proletariat. It's like any season of Idol, but you don't have to sit and listen to their individual sad backstories, so you can just get straight into the punching down from the beginning. No guilt. Makes sense that Netflix are doing this when you realize they'll be using the footage as a cost-saving device for the filming of Squid Game Season 2. Netflix is in fact casting 456 real players to compete for $4.56 million, one of the largest prizes in game show history. Well, no wonder Netflix needs to bump up their prices and introduce ads. They are creating such important and culturally critical television that says so much about our times. For the naysayers who think that game shows, especially the ones that replicate the desperately poor fighting each other for the scraps from the rich in order to join their ranks, including me from mere months ago, you all fail to see the truth that is, in fact, an art piece which critiques the inability of the state to provide the needs of the many and allowing individuals to anguish in poverty, where the capitalist neoliberal model picks a special few to hold them up as carrots to motivate the remaining lazy workers to just work a little bit harder. On that note, other shows that they're going to be turning into art reality programs include Ozark, where the teams of white-collar workers must get together and launder the most amount of money every week without getting caught. Teams will have challenges and mystery events which will make the laundering more complicated, and of course the team that manages to launder the least amount of money at the end of the week is eliminated in a cinematically pleasing way to end their story arc. Is It Cake? Where teams of proletariat bring billionaires before the guillotine and a panel of judges who have to determine, is this billionaire cake before cutting it open? Dave Chappelle presents The Stand-Ups. Comedians compete for a coveted Netflix comedy special deal. In order to get through, the comedians are given a weekly taboo topic to completely punch down on, and whoever punches down hardest, as judged by a panel of cancelled comedians who can't get a job but still have a public platform and are doing just fine, they even have themselves a couple of multi-million dollar Netflix specials. They then need to use all of their winning jokes as part of an hour-long, too controversial for regular TV special on Netflix. All of Us Are Dead, where we just film the poorest members of society as they go about their day. There is no cure, and nobody will come to save them. There is also no prize except maybe your life. Inflation is driving the cost of everyday items up to the point that pubs are considering making side salads optional to cut down on waste amid rising costs of groceries. Simone Douglas, who owns the venue The Duke of Brunswick, said they are filling up the entire garbage bin with side salads that nobody was eating. Now, normally this wouldn't be an issue, as they'd been doing it for years, but now that the cost of the salad has gone up and it's costing their venue their margin, it is suddenly an issue. Pubs have always offered side salads because salad was cheap, and they were happy to waste the food for the appearance of looking like they were offering a healthy option slash saving money while filling up a plate. But now, it is slightly more expensive, so they're willing to rethink the entire model. Seems the cost of living crisis is not bad for everyone, as avocados the world over are thrilled that lettuce has taken its place as the new problematic food of a generation and will enjoy a much-earned break from being villainized. But some venues are now asking patrons who know they definitely won't be eating the salad to let them know in advance. Although for years, if a customer expressed a distaste for a product and asked it to be removed, it would be met with a rolled eye and a begrudging acceptance to the point that people would rather just let the food go to waste in a song and dance of pretending that you just couldn't possibly fit in anymore. Oh no, I'm just so full. Seems pubs are looking to embrace the Jetstar model of providing the absolute bare minimum and going to new heights to provide the barest bare minimum. I mean, you brought a seat on the plane. Did you want that seat to have more than just a metal frame? Well, that'll cost extra. Food? That'll cost extra. And how long can you hold your breath, because we're doing a new vacuum plane where only paying customers will be given access to oxygen through our breathing apparatus, only an extra $40. And to cut down on costs and show your support and belief in our airline, we will ask you to choose if you want your seat to include a flotation device. After all, majority of flights make the entire distance without any concern, so you could save some real money on this flight if you choose to have no food, no seat cushions, limited air, or no air at all. Bargain. Some pub options for saving money will be listed as such. The food can come with a side salad or not. To save money, you can pay per minute on how much you'd like your food to be cooked, or have it not cooked at all, saving a lot on the cost of the chicken. Seating arrangements will need to be reconsidered as we prioritize our customers most able to be highly turned over. So our new seating options will include the stabbing or no stabbing sections. Sitting in no stabbing will cost extra, as our stabbing section does tend to encourage people to eat quickly and leave, or have them leave unexpectedly with the help of our friendly staff looking to take out their frustrations from management on someone, anyone. Meanwhile, it's looking like the grift of a generation, the gig economy, may not survive the cost of living crisis. Oh no! Share prices of companies in the gig economy have been performing poorly, even compared to the stock markets in general. And guys, I know you are eagerly refreshing your stock market apps to see how all that extra money you are raking in doing your side hustles to make the line go up. So I don't need to tell you that the market has been very bad recently. So very bad. It's almost as if it's a terrible time for large portions of the fragile illusions of life that we built. Who would have thought? This dates back to some 18 months ago, so don't even get it in your head to blame such trivialities as COVID, the war, or in the inevitable outcome of multiple generations of corporate greed driving prices up while wages go down, dragging the cost of products out of the range of most people. Don't try and get clever with me. DoorDash, a US exploitation and takeaway delivery firm, is down US $28 billion from nearly $90 billion over the same period. Which is what happens when you stop them from stealing the tips of their delivery workers. They lose money. Just Eat,
the parent company of Menulog, which delivers takeaway and passes false refund claims onto businesses and almost drives them into expensive loans to stay afloat in the UK, Europe and US, has fallen from a valuation high of £24 billion to just under £5 billion. It is trying to sell off Grubhub, a US business it bought for $5.9 billion just 2 years ago. Seems reckless expansion and spending millions of dollars on celebrities to promote your brand instead of paying your workers a living wage was a bad business model. Sure must have been nice to work with Snoop Dogg though. Bet they got some good stories out of it. He does seem like a nice guy. Meanwhile, Deliveroo, another UK takeaway company who has not only offered UK workers the chance to earn extra money, but also partake in extra protests, and has seen its valuation fall from £7 billion to £1.7 billion in only 9 months. And the granddaddy of them all, Uber, known for ride-hailing, takeaway food delivery, and occasional bouts of sexual assault, is now valued at US$49 billion compared to $125 billion in early 2021. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the leak of more than 124,000 documents which lays bare the ethically questionable practices that span a 5-year period when Uber was run by its co-founder, man showing how many violations Uber has gotten away with, this many, Travis Kalanick, who tried to force his disruption service into cities around the world, even if it meant breaching laws and taxi regulations. I mean, what's a few laws between dollars, right? Right? During the fierce backlash, data shows how Uber tried to gather support by discreetly courting prime ministers, presidents, billionaires, oligarchs, and media barons. And as we all know, the best things in society have always been negotiated in backroom deals with politicians and oligarchs. Leaked messages suggest Uber executives were under no illusions about the company's lawbreaking, with one executive joking they had become pirates, and another conceding, "We're just fucking illegal." In one leaked exchange, Kalanick dismissed concerns from other executives that sending Uber drivers to a protest in France put them at risk of violence from angry opponents of the taxi industry. "I think it's worth it," he said. "Violence guarantees success." Obviously taking in the standard cultural approach to the French, that of them being afraid of conflict, and not even slightly capable of defending themselves or making a fuss, when in reality, they are quite good at reorganizing political structures from the head down. Or at least, they knew their workers were entirely too poor to be considered a traditional enemy in France, and assumed that they'd be just fine. I should probably mention that in a statement, Kalanick's spokesperson said he never suggested that Uber should take advantage of violence at the expense of driver safety. And any suggestion that he was involved in such activity would be completely false. A totally believable statement, and not at all the exact thing your lawyer would workshop for you or your spokesperson to say to the media. The leak also contains texts between Kalanick and Emmanuel Macron, who secretly helped the company in France when he was the economy minister, allowing Uber frequent and discreet access to himself and his staff. Which would mean, I'd suspect, Scott Morrison of doing the leak, as he loves a good leak against the French president. But given the subject matter is worker safety and exposing corruption, does kind of neutralize that idea, so probably not. The Guardian has led a global investigation into the leaked Uber files, sharing the data with media organizations around the world via the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. or as they are known by politicians and corporations. I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for those meddling journalists. Basically, you can think of them as the anti-Murdoch press, as they go out of their way to ensure that the corrupt and the wicked are held to account, instead of put on a pedestal. In a statement responding to the leak, Uber admitted to mistakes and missteps, but said it had been transformed since 2017 under the leadership of its current chief executive and boss, who tells you, you don't need a pay bump, as they just introduced casual pizza party Thursdays. Dara Khosrowshahi, who said, we have not and we will not make excuses for our past behaviour that is clearly not in line with our present values. Instead, we ask the public to judge us by what we've done over the last 5 years and what we will do in the years to come. An interesting request, given that Uber and other companies are associated with the Saudi government through their funding ventures, despite the secret murder of a journalist, and the Saudi royal family has a seat on Uber's board as a result of those investments. Those guys probably called their ultra-premium service Uber Crime Scene to get away from the scene of the murder. Look, it's not a great start, Dara. But what about in 2020, when they threatened to leave California if they were forced to classify their workers as employees and not as faceless impediments to maximum profits as they were currently classified under Uber contracts? Oh, and the small matter barely worth noting, but like due diligence is important. The small matter of nearly 6,000 cases of sexual assault claims in the US alone in the 2 years preceding December 2019, so well within the purview of the preferred period of scrutiny. But it makes a lot of sense. I mean, why focus on the past when that's where all the really bad shit happened, and as all Americans are told constantly, always forget the indiscretions of the past. Who even wants to talk about the past? There's just so much of it, and every day there's more and more of it. Just stop, past. Just stop. Honestly, if people can love the royal family in this day and age, despite a significant lack of evidence of God, the cornerstone of their divine right to rule, and with a lot of public knowledge of the less than savoury acts that they undertook to amass wealth, power, and entire countries, then there is almost nothing a company can do to get turned out of public acceptance. Besides, how will businesses be expected to survive if they can't legally keep their non-employees at starvation wage levels? People and companies need to make sacrifices in these tough times. I mean, companies need to cut down on luxuries like pay packets and non-employee happiness, while people need to cut down on luxuries like excess snacks, food that they didn't dig from a dumpster, and potentially staying alive. I mean, staying alive is a real luxury in these times. Have non-employees tried being undead? It's a real money saver. You don't have to pay for a funeral for a start. That is a huge and often unexpected expense. Because now that you have stopped living, you haven't quite died yet either. You're sort of undead. It means food expenses will drop immensely, as things like nutritious food and vitamins will no longer be needed. Instead, non-employees can sustain themselves on a variety of options depending on their choice of undead lifestyle. Be they sustaining on the blood of the living or the brains of the recently deceased, you'll find a variety of delicious options still available to you. And no longer will they need to pay for heating, as they have converted into unfeeling creatures of the night. I mean, overall, it's just a smart, money-saving plan moving forward. And finally, the inevitable fusion of Australia and New Zealand news. New Zealand, or Aspirational Goals Australia. New Zealanders living in Australia, also known as deserters, could be given voting rights according to Anthony Albanese. Albanese and Jacinda Ardern met and discussed plans to attempt to lock in a likeable government for years to come by allowing New Zealand residents to vote in Australia. While the voting rights would be for those who have been a resident in Australia for a year, we do risk them becoming corrupted by the Murdoch media, whose presence in New Zealand is non-existent ever since their putrid dogma, apologies, that should have read news opinion, I wouldn't want to be showing bias of any kind, of Sky News Australia causing the Australian-born mass shooter of the Christchurch massacre to take their American-born culture war talking points into a literal war on citizens, at which point they decided to make like Homer Simpson and fade backwards into a bush so as to not influence the investigation. And the Dark Lord Murdoch was defeated by his own power. How ironic. Look, for those who are unaware, if in New Zealand, if you're an Australian who has been a resident for a year, you have voting rights in New Zealand. So we've been able to drip feed our corrupting influence there, but they have not had reciprocal rights. Fortunately for New Zealand, voting isn't compulsory and they don't provide democracy sausages, the two main motivating factors in Australia's democracy. Ardern said the progress of the citizenship deal will recognise New Zealanders living in Australia and their contribution to the country. We've long argued that New Zealanders are Australia's best migrants, and I don't say that lightly, Ardern said. Our ask has been for there to be a greater acknowledgement of the role that New Zealanders play here in Australia. Both leaders emphasised the progress to providing more temporary residence citizenship is common sense and in the spirit of friendship. Anthony Albanese declared he did not want Kiwis to be temporary residents forever, saying, "Think of all the highly talented Kiwis we have yet to claim. Taika Waititi has shown almost no interest in being claimed by Australia. We need to make it easier for him and others like him. This way, Australia can claim more famous artists without having to increase financial or cultural support for Australian art or Australian artists. We may even consider opening the doors to other famous artists we want to claim as our own in order to bolster our artistic profile. Just don't ask us to support a local who hasn't found success overseas. We will not do it." Upon hearing the news, however, Sky News Australia did start preparing to counter this narrative by digging the trenches for the new culture war with a dire warning that Labor is looking to create a Labor-controlled super country by granting New Zealand residents voting rights. And thanks for listening all the way through to the end of another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I really appreciate your time. And if you're returning, thank you for coming back. If you're new, thank you for listening through. I hope you've all enjoyed the episode. And if so, do consider supporting us. I have a link in my link tree where you can make a one-off donation. We are considering putting together a Patreon. If anyone is interested in that sort of thing, feel free to get in touch. And we can generate interest and we can see where people are at in terms of doing something like that. Please come and see the show. For now, that is the best way to support the podcast. It allows me to do these things a bit more regularly because I know things have been a little bit of a mess recently. And apologies for the lateness of this episode. It's just the trip over here has been long and I've had a lot to organize. But I really appreciate everyone's time. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you next time. Look after yourself. Stay safe. Get your boosters. And bye, 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 bye.